Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how present is the idea of life and death, of the process, of the journey? How present is that in your life? How aware are you of this journey? And I'm so excited to do this show about that. And referring to a book I just finished called A Celtic Book of Dying, The Path of Love in the Time of Transition. And I'm so thrilled to interview the author of this book. And I might not pronounce her name right, even though she just told me how to pronounce it. Phyllida Anam Ira.
That'll do, Peter. That's fine. That's good.
Well, welcome to Energy Stew.
And Thank you.
This book was just so meaningful to me, every part of it, because you really are totally immersed in this world, because you've done a lot of hospice work. You worked for a while with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who's the founder of death. I don't know how else to say it, but nobody wanted to talk about death until she presented it to us. And so I'm amazed at what this book teaches us. And it's not your only book. And I haven't read the other one, and I'm excited about it. So please help us on our journey, and how much you can support that with your work and your own personal experiences.
Okay, Peter, if there was a question there, I think the best place to start was the intention to incarnate. My purpose, it is so important in these days, especially, I believe, that we know why we have embodied into the earth, not on the earth, but into it, fully into the earth. And I did have a near-death experience when I was 2 years of age first, and then later on when I was 30-something. But I had to do a ritual, Peter, a ritual of reincarnating in the same body, but this time truly saying, yes, I am here, I will stay, and I will finish the work, like Jesus the Christ said, it is finished. I will not try to escape in any way in the meantime. So I do these rituals with people, especially if they've had an infantile near-death experience, and especially if they had been baptized by some religion or other that imposed a special contract on them. And are they okay as adults with that contract signing? And could they believe the patrons? So it is important for me to have this ritual. And I do it with people, as I say, who've had near-death experiences, because somehow, Peter, part of me was not willing almost to be in the earth, on the earth dancing, beautiful. That would have been fine. That would have been lovely on the earth. But you know, in our Celtic language, Egdalishjach Santalvnefa, to be in the holy ground of standing, not falling into it, but standing into it, having a reason to stand on the earth, like the tree has its very own reason. I need to have my reason for standing in the earth this time. So that was important to start off with, to have this ritual of reincarnating, of putting myself into the earth symbolically and having witnesses to welcome me in. Because, you know, when I came into the earth, into my mother's earth, it was very difficult for her because the year before I was born, two of her children died in 1 week. And she was told by the church not to cry anymore, or God will send you a further cross. And of course, at that time, she had a four-year-old child. And her feeling was, if I cry, if I work through my grief, then I am what we called flying in the face of God. I'm not sure if you have got that saying here, but it's an Irish saying, like you're testing God somehow by not saying it is God's will that he, and that's always he, takes this child from me. I must be grateful. And so my mother went through a life of denying death in herself, so she couldn't live fully. And then she's pregnant with me, Peter, the next year. Can you imagine that dear woman feeling guilt, feeling shame, feeling rejection, feeling not good enough as a mother, feeling that she had not said loudly, thy will be done, O merciful God. How can a broken person say, merciful God, you've just taken the baby out of my womb. You've ripped it from my family. There's nothing left.
What confusion.
Yes. So this is the credo into which I burst myself. And it was too much at 2 years of age. Of course it was. Because as we know now from our wonderful advanced psychology, the child will absorb the unfinished emotions in the mother, the emotions that have not been brought into the heart to be cleansed at the universal heart for feeling. So when we're feeling, we don't have all the emotions anymore. We have the truest devotion. And so my mother actually lived a life of never dropping a tear after that. No matter what happened, it was God's will quickly. And then, of course, my dear father, in order to cope with the grieving wife, with the fact that they didn't say, thy will be done, O God, he took to drinking. And that was his way of escaping his terrible grief. And in those days, 1943 in Ireland, it was not acceptable for a man to cry, especially publicly. No, that was not allowed. So rather than taste the salt of his own grieving life, he brought in the alcohol instead, swallowed it down, and went into another kind of near-death experience where dear alcoholics go, where dear addicted people go, into a near-death and hoping to God that this will be the death that they wanted in the drink, in the sex, in the overwork, in the what, so they can forget that they're a human being in the earth. And not just this bag of emotions that seem to just dribble out everywhere. So yes, that was the beautiful school I came into that I had.
What a school.
Yeah, it was an amazing school for which I am deeply, deeply grateful. And so I then the rest of my life went on then from grief to grief and more grief, so that I could eventually be able to work with dying people and not have emotion, but to move into that divine place of devotion where it's not an escapism. I'm fully embodied and the universal heart deals with the suffering. I don't. It's not up to my heart to take on anybody's pain, so I don't. I want to be healthy on the earth. And I let soul do all that work for me in bringing in the universal heart, which of course is a natural place of our physical heart when we've done the grief.
So you're working from love and expressing light and love to help people see their way.
I'm not aware of that. I'm only aware of the fact that I have done my own work. And work, by that I mean, I have looked at my rage, which is an aspect of grief. I've looked at my dripping anger over things, my annoyances, my small judgments, my projections. I've worked on all of these aspects of my shadow, number one, before I go near the deathbed of a person. I remember Elizabeth Kubler-Ross saying to me, it was 1983 that I met her. And I said to her, I would like to work with the dying. And she took one look at me and she said, oh, there's a lot of work for you to do before you get near the dying.
Wow, interesting.
I knew what she meant. So then 5 years later, having worked on my own stuff and having done her training, I worked alongside her for 10 years. And that was simply wonderful. Not just because of what she taught me, but what she taught me mostly was that if I do not deal with my own unfinished business, as I sit at the bedside of another, whether they're sick or whether they're dying, through this amazing expansion of consciousness, I am actually not helping the dying person because I'm still in some of my own stuff, right, which means I'm not fully present to anyone.
Right. I'm remembering a time where I was asked to be at the bedside of a man on his deathbed, and somehow I was drawn to tell him a story I saw about his youth that he kept hidden in himself. And I told him about it, and he said, oh my gosh. And his family was sitting all around, and he said, oh, I have to tell my family now. And he told them about this trouble in him that he had been hiding. And after that, his family told me that after that, he was in total peace the rest of his dying experience. And so much of, there's so much that we have to clear in our lives that can trouble us to the very end. And as Elizabeth told you, you needed to do that yourself.
Oh, yes. And this is what when people come to do trainings with me, we don't even talk about death. We don't even mention it because death and life are, they live in parallel lives. They're just living and dying in one moment. So we work only with the dysfunctional emotions from right back from the moment of conception to here and now. And whatever is unfinished in us, we deal with that first before we touch anything about death and dying. Because for me, that's the only gift I can give the dying. It's the only gift I can give to my clients in psychotherapy. It's the only gift I can give to my family and friends is total presence. I never advise. I never say any much. I sit in full presence. Now, I couldn't do that if I'm full of emotion. I can't do that with my brother who's dying at the moment. I can't do that with him if I'm full of conditioned love or ego love structures. I have to do it from a place of almost, and I'm saying almost because it sounds awful, neutral love, which is compassion, where there is no emotion. When we bring the emotion into the heart, we end up with devotion because the universal heart takes over. And then I can sit back and be in the presence of that.
When you say universal heart, I'm thinking of words called eternal love. And, we do come from love, but it's not
emotional.
It's really based on the big picture of life and death and the eternal nature of it all.
Yes, it's really about mystery, but for a lot of people, it's very interesting when I say to them, when you work with your grief and when you can sit with it and not be distracted, because that's what this age has shown us, how to be fully distracted. How not to sit with my feelings, how not to look at my anger, do something instead, watch another film, go for a drink, do something. For me, to really come to that place of presence in me, I need to stay with the grief. And for many, many people, it's anger they can't deal with, and they can't see that that's the grief. Let it come out in a space where nobody is hurt by it. And this is what Elizabeth showed us in the training. This is how we deal with the prisoners in Stockton Prison in Scotland. Elizabeth and I were there together for 1 week, living with the prisoners. Now, I can't do that with my own physical heart. There has to be a wider heart, and that is the template of every heart before the physicality comes into view. There is this wonderful energetic heart, and that's what holds the universe. That's what holds the suffering of the world, not my physical
heart. I think you've learned that a lot from your near-death experiences, because when we get to see the nature of the other side, and how alive it is, and how beautiful it is, we know that death is more precious than most people allow it to be. And so I'm grateful that, because I also had a near-death experience as a baby, and I always lived with this knowledge of our eternal selves and that we never really die. And yet the pain of grief is always there anyway with the dying, but there's a way to hold it that isn't so temporal. You know, it's seeing the bigger picture of the soul journey never ending. And to be with people on that journey, to know that they're going to be okay anyway, no matter the outcome, and to accept the fact that grief is always present, no matter what, no matter how evolved you are about life and death, the loss is terrible. You know, loss on this plane is terrible, right? We lost our nephew last year. Our grief was horrible. And yet I knew where he went, and I knew that he, and I even know now how okay he is on the other side, and it doesn't change how horrible the loss is.
It doesn't change how much you miss somebody, certainly, right. And that's for sure. And if we can keep the grief active, like looking at photographs, like talking, like we do in Ireland, we have a wake for 3 days. And that means that neighbors come in, we take out photographs, we talk about the dying person sitting in the bed. Yes. We say things like, you know, he didn't always tell the truth, did he? No, he didn't. That's right. We tell the truth. Mm-hmm. And we will say things like, Johnny, you never give me back that money that I owed you, you know. This is a way of completion, of helping the person who has died to see that, you know, it's not all love and light because you're dead. Come on, you're going to have to do something about what you left on the earth as an ancestor for us. What have you left for us to pick up?
The legacy.
Yeah, so we have this beautiful ritual called Court of Love, where we lovingly offer back to the beloved who died. Maybe the person was always feeling guilty, feeling ashamed, and that trickles through the generations. We offer back that this person who died needs the completion of that experience for themselves. Everything is looking for completion. Everything in the world looks for a completion of itself, of a wholeness of itself, so that the people on the earth can feel freed. The person who has died, the ancestor, has to own this. And it's a court of love. It's about loving, in being able to say, we offer you, let it make you whole as it frees me.
And I love that. Yeah.
It's totally beautiful, because then we find that the people on the earth, they don't have the same addictions, because the dead person, bless them, has now owned it. This is the havoc I have left on the earth. They're longing to clear that up, but they can't do it. So we on the earth are able to gather, we say in the Gaelic, take into your own heart the harvesting that was difficult to own, and we offer it back as a prayer. So we are freed and they are made whole.
Wow. And there aren't many opportunities for like people in, here I am in New York, to have those experiences with.
But we have these rituals. I've trained people now. We have them every week. One of them is called Look Back and the other is called The Court of Love. And it's beautiful because the ancestors are standing behind us. Those who want to heal, those who want to heal are allowed into the circle. Those who are not ready to heal yet, they don't have to heal with us. But the ones who are ready, they're just longing for this freedom. It is finished, like Jesus said. It's finished. Now I begin a whole clear sheet for my next incarnation. I don't have to drag that one with me.
But it's very hard for most people to not want to be all goodness and light about things and not be, you know, honest and in a loving way honest, but sometimes in harsh ways, like, you know, judgments. And you're not supposed to have judgments. You know, it's like, well, then where do those judgments go?
Yeah, I remember being at a yoga class, and the yoga teacher said, now everybody lie down and just imagine all the stresses and all the strains in your life at the moment and see them all going into a beautiful colored bubble. And watch this bubble being taken up into the sky, away into the sky. And because I'm a very practical, also scientific woman, I need to inquire and ask questions. And I said, what will happen when the bubble bursts? Because bubbles burst. Somebody's going to receive my rage and my anger.
Wow. And
for me, that's when I learned the lesson that I don't let go of anything. I integrate it. It's my experience. I will integrate it. So this idea of letting go of things, the family will pick it up. You know, this is what happens in our family circles. I'll say something like, I'm letting go of all my anger. I'm going to be sweet and lovely. Believe me, my son will pick it up. My daughter will pick it up. Their children will pick it up to the sixth generation. But what I do is I say, oh yes, that is my anger. Nobody need have it. And I bring it into the universal heart so that it can stir the cauldron. So if my heart gets cleansed and I don't have to look at that again.
But I think that's basically the purpose of life, is to come here to experience tragedies, experience anger, and all these difficult life journeys that we're on. And the goal, the purpose of life is to find answers, to find light, to create light from it, and to work through it so that we make it what you just described as wholeness and not spread it around like a disease, but own it and transform it into holiness, and then it disappears on its own because we've brought light to it. And I think that's basically, you know, even though people don't know they're doing that, I think that's the underlying purpose we're here for, and it doesn't always succeed. As a matter of fact, so many people, you know, haven't had this deep perspective that you hold about it.
You see, I truly don't see myself any different to everybody else in the world. I believe in the me too. Me too, I judge. Me too, I get angry. Me too, I do all that. Because the moment I say to myself, well, I don't do that, Putin does it, Hitler did it, the IRA did it in Northern Ireland, that awful man down the road does it. You know, I'm capable of every possible act of atrocity. I am Phillida Anna Myra. Me too, I can do that too. And if I'm not really conscious of my actions every day, I can find myself, projecting that to somebody, projecting that. Like this morning, we had a beautiful ceremony, which we have every morning. We sing the Celtic Gucha, and they're beautiful. They're morning songs, they're delighting songs, all sorts of beautiful music. But what we do is we sing one of the Gucha to Putin. Because at the moment, who needs the most love in the world?
Oh, that's beautiful. To transform, to transmute dark energy into light.
I don't even call it dark energy. No, it's energy.
All right, good. Thank you.
He is that used helps. In some way. That's yeah. Not skill.
We're in a complicated way.
And in Northern Ireland, I held many, many ceremonies for the IRA, candles, lighting candles. I am one with the terrorists. I am one with the nun who prays. I am one with the young man cursing God in an alleyway. I am all that. And if I don't own it, somehow it'll creep into my community. And for me, it's me too.
That's very profound. I love hearing that from you. We're really running out of time.
Yes.
Your book is a Celtic Book of Dying, The Path of Love and the Time of Transition. Philida Anam Ira.
Wonderful, you've got it. Can I just say that the next book is very interesting because I talk about the orgasm of dying. And that's why I call it The Last Ecstasy, and how through medication, how through so much stuff that we carry, unfinished business, we can't enter into the orgasm of dying, which is beautiful, which was meant to be in the beginning with the holy oils, with the Eucharist, so that we can totally ascend in the most unbelievable orgasm.
I can't wait to get that book and interview you about it. I'm so excited to hear about it.
I'm longing for that.
So thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. I love talking with you hearing your wisdom. And this,
thank you, Peter.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heart river.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.